You're listening to Perspective on WFHR 1320 AM, 97.5 FM. I'm Melissa Kay, bringing you news in our community. During this interview, I'm talking with Wood County Sheriff Sean Becker on April 6th, 2026. Thank you for joining me, Sean, to bring the community an update from the Wood County Sheriff's Department.
Always a pleasure. Thanks for being here.
So you had a late night last night.
Yeah,
let's start with that, because I'm sure many people heard about the incident going on in Marshfield, and teams from our area were called in to help.
Yeah, as all of our law enforcement agencies do, you know, especially within the county, we work together, and they had an incident that had went on for several hours that involved the deployment of our special response team. And our team is combined with the Marshfield Police Department's team, and this situation arose to an incident that, you know, required that just for public safety. And that incident went on for several hours into the early morning hours of today with a peaceful resolution.
That's good.
Once a perimeter was set up around this individual's residence, our negotiators, along with Marshfield Police Department, talked to this individual for several hours to try to get him to surrender himself. There were several charges that he was facing, from domestic abuse to a felon in possession of a firearm. There was some information that he might have discharged the firearm. That's what rose to the level of needing, you know, our special response team. So happy to report that he did surrender without incident and without anybody getting hurt in the community. No law enforcement officers were hurt, and the individual wasn't hurt as well. He's now in custody in our jail, and we'll face court proceedings as we move forward.
Okay. And just for those of us who, you know, we see those negotiations happening on TV shows and things like that, are you out there with the bullhorn? Are you talking on a cell phone? Like, how do you communicate?
A little bit of a combination. You know, during the time he was communicating with negotiators, and they're doing their best to try to get him to come out. They lost communication with him for a time, for several hours or an hour or so. And then people on the perimeter, and having our armored vehicle there, Marshfield Police Department also has an armored vehicle, having them positioned to keep, you know, our officers and deputies safe, and then communicating on site with them. I'm like, hey, you know, come out. You know, we have kind of a script that we follow, to come out within peacefully. But it's a pretty big disruption when you have people on site, you know, trying to communicate with the person inside and he's not cooperating. You know, look at all the residences around there.
Right.
You know, you have to evacuate people that are close by. So it's a pretty big disruption, you know, and then you're talking blocks, you know, that had to be, streets had to be blocked. And, you know, fortunately this was happening, you know, late at night into early morning hours of this morning, where you don't have a lot of that, you know, vehicle traffic or pedestrian traffic. People are told to shelter in place.
Mm-hmm.
But if they're, you know, within a few residents, we require them to evacuate for safety purposes. But it's a pretty big disruption.
Yeah. You know, so that late at night, are you able to put them up at a hotel or?
Most times they'll find somebody to stay with. But if it came down to that, we could do that.
Mm. Okay. Well, glad that everybody
me too.
Is safe and that you're okay. And I hope you get a nap today.
Eventually, I will. It's just, you know, something to bring up to, the listeners, how important it is to have those strong working relationships, you know, within especially law enforcement agencies.
Mm-hmm.
We combined our special response teams, you know, several years ago, and we train together a lot. And then if we do have an incident like this, those are the first calls that we make. And as an administrator, as you look at this situation, you have to think of the future. As the longer it goes, you can't leave your staff there on site. You have to start thinking about, okay, who do we bring in to replace the people on scene?
Right.
Do we need different negotiators coming in to talk with this individual? You know, it might be a short event, you know, for the community to see, it took a couple hours. But if you look at the planning process of it, okay, the incident happens, you know, public safety is first. You know, we need to get our perimeter set. We need to evacuate people. We got to make sure that people are safe. And then you kind of, you know, the situation continues from there. So we were thinking last night into the early hours when this individual wasn't communicating with us, all right, what's our plan?
Yeah.
How are we going to address this? And then what are we going to be doing with staffing? And even through the whole incident, we were replacing people on the perimeter and then thinking, okay, what is the next special response team that we're going to need as this goes on? You know, and then you look at, you know, our relationship with the Wisconsin Rapids Police Department. They have a special response team. And then I was thinking, okay, Marshfield, Marathon County Sheriff's Department, you know, so it's a as you plan, it goes on. And unfortunately, like I said, he gave up.
Hmm. And surrendered.
Correct.
Well, that's the best possible outcome.
Absolutely.
And nobody was injured. So.
Yep.
Well, and along with that, last month when you were in, we were talking about the 15th annual crisis intervention training class that just happened last month with, what was it, the ice storm or the snowstorm that we had in the midst of that? But the training still went on.
It did. You know, and that's a great segue into May being, May is National Mental Health Awareness Month.
Mm-hmm.
And as people have gotten to know me throughout, you know, especially the years of as sheriff and as a supervisor, the passion and the platform for mental health means a lot to not just me personally, but, you know, our department, and seeing how things have evolved throughout, you know, my career that goes almost three decades, and how the focus has been now mental health, you know, our wellness, you know, our staff's wellness. And then, you know, how can we, you know, as law enforcement officers get trained better? And that's where CIT comes in. And I'm very proud of the class, you know, 15 years now. And I know I started about, you know, talked about how it evolved, but just to see it continue and it'll continue for, you know, and it'll keep getting bigger.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
well, and you have a lot of other agencies coming in from other parts of the state.
Yeah, it's just something that, as you can tell, I'm very proud of.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, like I said, you know, you look at all the mental health initiatives that has, you know, law enforcement has taken, you know, just on the patrol side of things. Now you look at the corrections side of things, which is huge,
mm-hmm.
you know, and the inmate programming that we have been doing now with the new facility. It's been, you know, been very fortunate, you know, just on the chaplain side of things. We're very lucky to have one of our county board members take that over as a volunteer, Donna Rosar.
Mm-hmm.
You know, about a month ago, we had to replace our previous person due to health reasons. And she stepped up because she just started to come into the jail just to provide a chaplaincy, just because of her background. And she really likes it. And then that kind of grew into something where now she's overseeing at least that portion of our jail programming.
Mm.
But there's a lot of things that we do within our jail that provide inmate programming. And another huge highlight that was kind of a dream of ours to, you know, build those relationships within your county departments, because you're all working together, and to see one build throughout the years with human services and now providing our mental health services within the jail. That to me was a game changer. It really was. And I have to commend, you know, human services, especially Katie Mylock, you know, to help facilitate that and make that happen, where they're providing the services within the facility, because that's so important for us, because that streamlines, you know, opportunities for individuals that are struggling within the facility. Do they stay within the jail, or are they that struggling that much they need to go to a mental health facility, a secured facility somewhere else?
Mm-hmm.
And knowing that and that relationship, I really think saves lives. I really do. If you look at the history of our facility, our previous facility, you know, were there a lot of struggles where we weren't doing a good enough job, you know, focusing on mental health.
Mm-hmm.
And that showed, you know, it really did. Not only the facility was unsafe, but, you know, we didn't have that initiatives that we do now. And I think you're really seeing a big difference. But, you know, the highlight for me is in the month, it's been named it, where years ago, that focus wasn't there.
Right.
You know, and it is
now. It
was
more of a taboo topic that people didn't talk about.
No. And you know, the view, which is very unfair to individuals when they were struggling through a crisis years ago, you know, you're looked down upon. Now, I personally feel when people take that initiative to get help on their own, that needs to be celebrated. Mm-hmm. You know, you weren't forced into a situation. You realized yourself, or, you know, somebody close to you, you know, made you realize it. And then you made that decision, like, okay, what are my resources? You know, who can help me through this crisis? You know, and whether it's a counselor, a therapist, you know, you're going through your church or a peer. Mm-hmm. That needs to be celebrated. And it's one of the biggest rewarding things that I've seen, you know, throughout my career is that change, seeing that stigma change where you're hearing it more, you know, whether it's on the news, you know, just being proactive in communities all across, not just Wood County, but the state. Mm-hmm. It's very rewarding to see that, you know, because for me, you know, all the things I've mentioned, I've taken advantage of that and I'm a better person for it. So it's really nice to see that stigma change, you know, especially throughout my career and how important it is with our wellness, you know, as law enforcement officers, corrections officers, you know, taking care of ourselves is very important because if we don't, how can you expect us to take care of the community that we serve?
That's a very good point. Well, let's take a pause here, Sheriff Becker, and to hear from our sponsors. I'm Melissa Kay talking with Wood County Sheriff Sean Becker, and you're listening to Perspective on 1320 AM, 97.5 FM, WFHR. Welcome. You're listening to Perspective on WFHR 1320 AM, 97.5 FM. I'm Melissa Kay, bringing you news in our community. I've been speaking with Wood County Sheriff Sean Becker, and where we left off, we were talking about how the stigma around mental health and mental health crises has changed, and the open conversations that are happening. You've said that you find those rewarding as you've had a 30-year career in law enforcement.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. You know, just the highlights. You know, we brought up CIT and then the community support. You know, getting grant funding like through Legacy to have a position at the sheriff's department where it's somebody that focuses solely on mental health and, you know, as an investigator, and Doug Christensen started that position, and now Alicia Brundage is in it, and shout out to her, happy birthday.
Ah.
And she celebrated her birthday in the last few days, doing a great job. And then the relationships that, you know, we develop through, you know, these initiatives, you know, like I had mentioned, human services and, you know, that CIT course and how that built. It's just a great story that, you know, I love to talk about. If somebody brings it up, I could sit and talk about it for hours, you know. And, you know, like I said, I brought up Doug and, you know, Alicia, Katie Sizz, and, you know, many, many others. Sheriff DeFabio is now in a position at the department where it's a deflection position that really also works on, you know, that mental health side of things where people are in crisis, got in trouble. Can we work through that and, you know, maybe divert these charges that, you know, you might have been arrested or cited on or something like that. I just like the movement that you're seeing across the country, just on the focus on the law enforcement side and that relationship building and that focus on mental health has been really rewarding to see.
Well, and something that I've always wondered about and struggled a little bit with is when law enforcement gets called in and it's a mental health crisis. Mm-hmm. And that's a lot that is being asked of you as a law enforcement professional who's maybe you've taken some training in crisis intervention, but that's not your profession.
No, we're not social workers, but sometimes we have to pretend to be.
Just like bartenders, right? You got to be therapists.
Yeah, absolutely. But, you know, my dream would be someday if somebody's in crisis and, you know, they're comfortable with getting help, that they go to a hospital, you know, where you don't have to call law enforcement. And then, you know, the decision is made that you're going to be, you know, committed somewhere, and then you lose freedom, and then you're being handcuffed, and then you're being transported, again, for your own safety. But, you
know, that takes its own mental toll.
It does. And how does that individual feel about that law enforcement officer when I called for help? You know, but some situations do arise to that. And that's one thing that we've seen throughout, you know, the career and how that has changed, where a lot of people in, you know, the early days of my career got committed. And, you know, now, you know, looking at it, they probably shouldn't have been. Maybe there could have been other opportunities, mm-hmm. you know, a safety plan, working with, you know, other stakeholders in the community that we've, you know, built those relationships, but they weren't there then. It was a system that, you know, was evolving and changing. And I agree with now, you know, mm-hmm. I really do. You know, if we could have, you know, that welfare check come in and we go make sure the scene's safe for everybody, right. And then hand it off to somebody that, all right, this is the training level that I have. Now we've got somebody here that, you know, can take this step further and help that person through that crisis.
Yeah.
There will be situations that we will have to deal with, and people will get committed because it's unfortunately gotten that level. But mm-hmm. I like to take it a step, you know, back and like, all right, let's not get to that point and really rely on our hospitals to, when people are struggling, they feel comfortable with going there,
mm-hmm.
you know, and I do believe that's changing that. And those relationships, those professional relationships with our hospitals are building to go that direction.
Mm-hmm.
I just hope someday that's just the way it's going to be, you know, where I can go there, hey, I need help. And then, all right, we've got people on staff to work through that,
yeah.
you know, assessment and get the help that person needs.
Well, and that delves into a little bit of our healthcare crisis issues in this country and people being able to afford healthcare. Mm-hmm. But we won't get into that in this conversation.
Please, let's not.
let's instead talk a little bit more about the National Corrections Officers Appreciation Week. Well, this airs next week. Right now, we're in the week, May 3 through 9. And we want to honor and appreciate our corrections officers because that is a tough job. And they are pretty isolated.
Yeah, they're part of the team. You know, unfortunately, sometimes, you know, they might get ignored, but they have a huge part of our team. You know, you're dealing with people that some are at their worst, and you have to be very cautious and protect yourself. But you also have to look at, you know, how can we as corrections officers help the individual that are in custody.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not an easy job. And in my opinion, every day is corrections officer day to me. But here's a week that has been designated for them. And, we've been throughout the week providing extra meals and appreciation that we can. So they know that we all, even as administrators, appreciate the hard work that they do. And they're part of our team.
Mm-hmm.
It makes me really think about our county and what we've done and what, the support that we've given, you know, a new facility, mm-hmm. you know, we've talked about that. Our county board was behind that. I'm very proud of all of them for working together to make something happen that needed to. And, you know, that's part of for our corrections officers, and paying them, you know, mm-hmm. looking at the pay rates in comparison, not just other counties, but the state prison system. And moving the pay up, you know, should be more, but it's better than nothing. You know, it's a tough job, you know, when you're dealing with people that, you know, just don't want to cooperate, and you have to find ways to work with them so they do cooperate while they're in custody. You know, most of the people within our jail will return to the community, you know, and having that belief, which I've really seen throughout the years of that inmate programming, that mental health part of things within the jail, people are believing it, and that's mm-hmm. where we can make a difference. And it starts with the staff believing it and working with people, you know, that are at their worst.
Hmm. So if you get a chance and you know a corrections officer, reach out and say thank you, or
please thank
just
them.
A pat on the back. Any mm-hmm. any words of encouragement are always helpful.
Absolutely. It's not an easy job.
No. Let's touch on a couple things happening on June 13th in our last few minutes here. Back the Badge Bench Press Meet is happening on June 13th at the Anchor Bay Bar and Grill. People can still enter.
Absolutely.
The deadline is June 8th, so you have practically an entire month here.
Mm-hmm.
So what is this about?
Yeah, I used to compete in bench press competitions several years ago, and then COVID changed everything for for all of us,
mm-hmm.
Any events. And then we are looking at, we've done fundraisers for, our canine unit, our special response team, and thought, hey, maybe why don't we try bringing this back? And then Anchor Bay thought, hey, great idea, let's do it. So this will be the third annual Back the Badge Bench Press Meet. We're raising money for our special response team and the Wisconsin Law Enforcement Memorial in Madison. So just looking to get as many lifters as we can. Being it's our third year, it's a few highlights. There's a Wisconsin Rapids fireman that is very strong. And I know there's been some stories out in the media on him, Dylan West, and we we have the baddest badge part of the meet. So whoever benches the most, bench presses the most, we'll get this belt that says that you're the baddest badge. And he's done it twice, and he came out last time. He's one of our temps for our special response team, and he says, "Oh, I'm coming." So he'll be defending his title, and he bench presses his goal. He told me last night or this morning, 450 pounds.
Whoa,
that is a lot of weight.
That is a lot of weight,
and he doesn't weigh a lot either. He was just. But, there's been a lot of other local people, Wisconsin Rapids police officer Nick Brockman, also bench presses close to 400 pounds. Our own Justice Arndt does well over 300. Brandon Christensen, well over 200. Shane Heiser, a good friend of mine, he works for DCI, over 300. And you'll see some other people that have committed to coming. There's a another, he's not a law enforcement officer, but a good friend, Jamie Zweers, does over 500.
Wow.
And you're looking at some, I'm telling you from the experience that I've had throughout my years of being involved in these types of events, that's a lot of weight for people you're pushing.
Yes.
So you'll see, if you want to see something pretty unique that's different, and weather permitting, we'll have a great event outside on the on the stage where bands are. Works out great. We'll have somebody singing the national anthem. Hopefully we'll have a flyover.
Nice.
We're working on that with, drawing a blank.
It's okay. You get a pass.
All right. Thank you. Anyway, and then, the sponsors that come up and help us out with the meet, Roush Companies, they were new this year. Trinity Services, Herbs Construction, they've been sponsoring the meet every year. It's my family's business, so they probably feel like they have to. Venture Architects, Samuels Group, they're very instrumental in building the jail. Lucky's Downtown, been always very supportive. And many other people that are, local that come forward and help us, make this happen for, for a special response team. So it means a lot.
That sounds like a fun event. That is Saturday, June 13th from 11 to 2, roughly, at Anchor Bay Bar and Grill. People can come and just observe, right?
Absolutely. Come observe, and then afterwards, Anchor Bay's got a band set up, so you can stay and hang out. Let's keep our fingers crossed so we have great weather.
Beautiful
we'll be outside.
Weather, And another event that's taking place on June 13th is the Andrew Mueller Memorial. And for those who may not remember, Andrew Mueller died of a peanut allergy on November 25th, 2024. So just a year and a half ago, but Andrew's parents have worked really hard to try to pass that all first responders can carry epinephrine on them when they're responding to a situation. They have it on them and can administer it because that could have saved, potentially could have saved his life.
Right. Shortly after that unfortunate passing, the parents really took this on and started working fundraising efforts to focus on law enforcement agencies, especially the rural ones. And they've provided, the service now, the EpiPens.
Commonly known as, yes.
We've had it for several months now. Wisconsin Rapids PD has, Grand Rapids Police Department, and Wisconsin Rapids Police Department already had a save with it. And this was provided by the Mueller family. So it's tough to talk about just because, it wasn't that long ago that the family lost Andrew, but they've taken this on, and their goal is to get it with every law enforcement agency in the state. Mm-hmm. And they've equipped, they're working with now with the Portage County Sheriff's Department. That's going to happen very soon. Mm-hmm. They did provide it for the Adams County Sheriff's Department. So please come out and support that event. You could do both events. Andrew's event goes on at Golden Sands Speedway on the 13th. Really, all day and into the night. It's a car show, and I got a sneak peek recently, well, actually last Saturday, at some of the vehicles that were going to be there. And then we did a commercial, Sheriff Lucas and I did a commercial with Mark Mueller, where we had pulled him over at the racetrack. Go check it out. It's on
oh,
Facebook.
That sounds fun.
Trying to make it, just an awareness thing, and, and have some fun with it, and have him, pull him over, and have, it was just a fun video to do for the circumstances.
That sounds entertaining.
Yeah.
And a great cause to
Absolutely.
Both of those things to come out to on June 13th. And then I'm sure more information will be posted on Facebook pages.
Absolutely.
So keep your eye out for those things.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, as always, Sheriff Becker, this conversation goes by so fast. We have so much to talk about, but I very much appreciate you talking with us today. I'm Melissa Kay, speaking with Sheriff Sean Becker of the Wood County Sheriff Department. Thank you, Sean.
You bet. Thank you.
And thank you to listeners joining us for news in our community on Perspective, 1320 AM, 97.5 FM, WFHR.